Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. I have a two-part podcast coming up. Yes, I'm sorry, another two-part podcast, but I have a good reason for splitting this up. Jeff Horning is a paramedic who I originally trained with when I was going through EMT school, and he is actually the one that I learned quite a bit from initially and helped kind of steer me towards the medical career as being my choice for the future. Now with Jeff, I asked him onto the show because he was very interested in the FOMED podcast, and we wanted to talk about patient handoffs. So the first part is going to be patient handoffs from EMS to the ED. And the reason why we're splitting up into the two part is because I want to talk about separately ED to EMS handoffs. And so that's going to be our second part here coming up. Now with this, we're mostly going to let Jeff Horning do most of the talking. I'll come in at the end, and then we're also going to have a little bit of my thoughts as far as what I think should be done with EMS to ED that he didn't mention, or just to reemphasize a few points. Now, I do have to apologize because when Jeff was doing this, unfortunately, with Saudi Arabia, there were some limitations. We could not do FaceTime, and we could not do Skype. So for this quick conversation, we decided to do it by cell phone. So I'm holding the cell phone up to my mic, so it does not sound the same quality as usual. I apologize, but this is very good content, and I wanted to make sure that you all heard it. So we left it in there, and at the very end, I do have a little bit of what Jeff is telling us, a story of our first call together. It's a very good call. It's kind of what helped put me towards going to medicine after all. So that's just something on the end if you want to listen to it. Otherwise, let's go ahead and we're going to get started in the podcast. So like I said, Jeff is from Missouri originally, and now he lives in Saudi Arabia.
So I came to EMS after leaving the Marine Corps, and I started in fire and first response in 2000 in a little town in Missouri. I really loved firefighting, and I said, you know, this is the coolest thing ever. How do I get paid to do this? Because I was a paid on-call firefighter, and I said, how do I get somebody to give me money for this awesome, cool job? And everybody said, be a paramedic. And I said, well, I don't like blood, and I don't like sick people. I want to fight fire. I came from the Marine Corps. I do fire, aggressive things. I don't want to, you know, sit with somebody while they're dying. That sounds horrible. And they said, well, that's how you get the job. And I said, okay. So I started EMT school. And that led me to a job at a local community ER where I was an ER tech for 2 years, and I worked the night shift. And I learned that, you know, a lot of people think, those of us out in the rural area, you know, they think we must see splinters and, you know, maybe the occasional birdshot, shotgun wound or something. And I can tell you that the night shift at a regional ER can get just as crazy as you can imagine. And I did that for 2 years, and then switched to the ambulance, and had started paramedic school. I was licensed as a paramedic in 2003. I was in school when the Twin Towers went down, and was still working at the ER when that happened. And that definitely changed our world and influenced things. It was very interesting. We were suddenly heroes. And prior to that, I think everybody pretty much just said, oh, there's the ambulance drivers. I went on, finished paramedic school, had a couple of great, great career moves as a paramedic, finished college, started a master's program at the University of Missouri in business. Kind of as a result of that program, got recruited over to Saudi Arabia because they were transitioning from a diploma program in allied health to a bachelor's program. And so they needed people with a lot of experience and a little bit of education. I'd already been a program director, and so they brought me over. And it was great. It was very interesting. And, you know, it's been a crazy ride since then. I've since finished my master's degree in public health, currently certified in public health by the National Board of Public Health Examiners, and still a certified paramedic, still a certified firefighter, but I got to tell you, I haven't seen a hose in 5 years. I think it would be a little bit, it could be a little bit beyond me to really say I'm a modern-day firefighter. So, that's me.
So you as the EMS provider, you're the paramedic, you're bringing a patient to the ED. What do you think are some tips on the EMS and the ED side to make that transfer better?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's going to depend a little bit on what the specific protocols are and what any problems or historical issues have been in the area that you're working in. But generally, what we as EMS providers need to find a way to do is communicate to you, the ER provider, everything we've seen in the last 15 to 35 minutes, depending on where we are with the patient. And, you know, that's going to include some of the social stuff that we've garnered from where they live, how they live, the people around them, was there a good social network, and then, of course, to the brass tacks of what is their health status now. And I think from our side, as EMS providers, anywhere that we make a mistake is that we try and cram 25 or 35 minutes of experience with our patient into a 1 or 2 minute report to the physician or the nurses, and they end up understandably rolling their eyes a little bit and just saying, you know, what's his blood pressure? What are his vital signs? Why is he here? And I've seen that frustration on the face of EMS providers, and I don't think, not to blame us, but I don't think that we often sit down and say to ourselves, well, actually, we're the cause of that. We just tried to overwhelm them with information, when really what we should have done is succinctly stated, here's what we were called to, here's what we found, here's what I did, and here are my concerns about the call, if I had any. I can think of many calls where that's exactly how I did it, and the ER was extremely, extremely receptive to that. Now, just to go on for a second, from the ED side, I can harp on this for hours. So, as an educator, one of the things I've had the, I don't know if I'd say the privilege of doing, but I've had the opportunity to do over the years is go through so many different iterations of textbooks and articles and everything written by EMS providers out there in almost the last 30 years. I actually have some papers from the 80s that I still use because they're so good. Paramedics and EMS providers in general were never meant to be standalone independent providers. We were meant to be part of a system. And even NHTSA, National Highway Safety Traffic Administration, sees us as part of a system. And in many busy districts, whether they be rural and they be busy because they're understaffed, or whether they be urban and they're busy because they're running 10 to 12 to 15 calls a day, what a lot of times you see is EMS comes in, gives a really quick report, drops off the patient, and never learns anything else about the patient. They don't learn whether they did a good job. They don't learn whether we don't diagnose in EMS, but whether their index of suspicion was correct or was pointed in the right direction, or what they could do better next time. Generally, I hate to say it, but staff are usually so busy, and it's usually to the point that the only time we're going to find out anything is if we've done something wrong and it gets put into a written complaint. So I would really like to see people go back to EMS is a part of the system. I know I do a lot of teaching of the alphabet soup classes here, the PHTLS, ACLS, BLS, and I oftentimes at hospital nurses, and one of the things I always impart to them is work with your paramedics. Please, please, please work with your paramedics. You know, there's nothing like you nurses and you physicians in a hospital who can really take the time to just take 5 minutes and just use a teachable moment and let me know whether my treatment was right, was wrong, was correct, how it went. I really don't want to hear about that later on the QA form. I'd really love to hear about it, you know, in real time when possible.
So that was a great discussion by Jeff Horning. I do want to add in a few points. One thing I did have some specific requests for on Twitter when I posted about doing these handoffs was someone had asked about radio reports. So I'd like to go over a few basic things of what I would like to hear on a radio report. Of course, start with the basic patient information. This is age, gender, those types of things, especially if they are coming from a nursing home, if they're coming from the highway after an accident. If you can give a little bit of the location information, that'd be very helpful. Of course, mention the complaint, mention also the vital signs with emphasis on those vital signs that are irregular or have been changing. Also mention pertinent findings. So don't give me the whole physical exam when you're doing the radio report. I just need to know the things that matter. Does this patient have pain in a particular location that may imply that something more is going on, or do they have other findings of significance? Also mention the interventions that were performed, as well as interventions that may need to be done immediately or urgently after you get to the ED. So if this is someone you could not get an airway in the back of the ambulance but needs an airway right away, this is a great time to mention that and let us know. And of course, please give us an ETA, and especially if you're an outlying place. So if you did not just pick up this patient about 2 minutes away from the hospital, please give us a call really as far ahead of time as possible, because if you have a coding patient and or a really sick trauma patient and you're only 2 minutes away when you get the report, that's not enough time for us to gather our resources, and that really doesn't make you look very good. So please don't do that. If you're, you know, further away, especially if you're 20 or more minutes out, I'd say about the 15-20 minute mark, we'd really like to get that, because some services like respiratory therapy in some places or radiology in some places, especially at night, they may not be at a part of the hospital that's going to allow them to be right there to help us out. So please, if that's going to be an issue and you foresee something that's going to really need it, give us a heads up as soon as possible, especially that 15 to 20 minute range seems really good. Now, don't call us an hour away unless you need something specific like medical control, because for things like that, it's helpful, but it's not as helpful as knowing when they're going to come in closer, and we may even forget about that patient coming if it's too far out. So really, 15-20 minutes, at least in my area, seems like a good time frame. What about once EMS arrives? Well, especially if this patient is sick or critical, you need to be at the bedside if you're the person who's going to take care of this patient in the ED. Don't wait until your nurses come back to tell you if 10 minutes later what's going on and EMS has already left because they got to go to their next call. Don't do that. Really, if this is a sick patient, or if you're just available at all, if you can see them and at least talk to the paramedic before they leave, that's the better place. But if this patient is sick, if they need things done right away, you better be there and start getting ready, or at least make the time to get there as quickly as possible. Now, in the perfect ideal setting, what I like to do is, let's say this is a bad trauma patient or whatever, but really this is just good general practice, is I like to be there and I ask EMS to give them their report. And I stay silent, I let them do their thing. Unless there's something specific that needs to be done, I let them finish their whole initial report before I interrupt. What are times to interrupt, such as when you need airway control, or if there's something that you see pertinent on your findings, they're going to need something specific right away. So if I see something of concern and I want to get the ultrasound going, or this is someone who's really sick and I want that, I'm going to ask someone to get me that. But otherwise, I'm going to let them continue with their report. EMS may be asking, well, what's a good way to give it? Now, there's lots of different ways to give good patient reports. So I'm not going to talk about all the different ways, but I am going to talk about one method I really like, and it's very simple. It's called the MIST technique. Now, MIST stands for mechanism or medical complaint. That's the M. I is for injuries or illnesses identified. S is for signs and symptoms. And T is for treatments. So with that, I'd like to give you an example of when you would give this MIST report and how to do it. All right, so let's go to a certain patient. We're going to say that this was an MVA. So from the beginning, let's say I'm the paramedic who's going to give a report. As soon as we walk in, everyone's going to be quiet. They're going to listen to me as I start. And this is how I'm going to begin. I have a 28-year-old male here who was involved in a rollover MVA. The vehicle was found on its top. There was significant impact and damage to the front and the side of the vehicle on the driver's side. There was impingement into the driver's compartment. He was unrestrained, and he looks to be about 6 foot. Normal body habit is probably about 80 kilograms. He has no known medical history or allergies, at least from what we can gather. Okay, and so that was my mechanism report. That's my M right there. Now we're going to move on to injuries. On our exam, it looks like he does have altered status. He has been confused. He has not been responding appropriately, but he is not combative. He does have a significant scalp hematoma and a laceration of the posterior head. He does have tenderness to the chest and abdomen, with bruising noted to the abdomen. He also does have bilateral femur fractures. He was pinned at the time of injury. He did require extrication to be removed. Okay, so that was our eye. We're going to move to our signs and symptoms. So this is primarily vital signs in my mind. This is what I want after the initial what we found. So his vital signs are blood pressure of 90 over 50, which has been slowly dropping. It was originally 120 over 80. He does have an SpO2 of 92%. We did put him on a non-rebreather just a few minutes ago, and that did drop from 98%. He's on 15 liters per minute. He did receive a small fluid bolus through a 16-gauge and left AC. He did receive 500 cc's of normal saline. We do not have a second IV. We were unable to obtain it. We did attempt once into the other AC. His blood sugar, though, was 110. His GCS is 12, and you get that breakdown from there. And then we move on to our treatments. Like I said, that would be mentioning our fluids. And also we would say that we did put a dressing to the posterior head, and we provided him 4 milligrams of morphine while we were en route. You'd kind of mention anything, any other treatments or at least treatments you may need. So we'd say that this patient would potentially need to be intubated, and we suspect that may be the case as his GCS is lowering over time and he's becoming more unstable with time. And so that'd just be a quick example of that missed report. While they're talking, you as the person who's going to be taking care of this patient can still run through things like your ABCs. So you can assess the airway and say, and you may even interrupt the paramedic and say, okay, I need someone to go and get my intubation supplies. We're going to start RSI after he finishes this, or whatever technique you want to use. But that's just one example. Those are the aspects I'd like to see. Now, Jeff briefly mentioned this, and I like to mention this some more. Feedback. Feedback is crucial. I believe that good feedback makes all the difference in the world. And that's from both sides. I want EMS and the ED to talk back and forth. And this is constructive criticism or praise. I want you to give me good stuff. I want to know what I did right and what I could do to get myself better in the future. Sometimes this feedback can be immediate, but most of the time this is going to be the next time you see that person. If you're the EMS or if you're the person who's taking care of that patient, as we'll mention the second part, ask for the feedback from the other group and see what they said. See what you can do to become better next time. So like I said, those are a couple of the few things there I'd like to mention. I do want to briefly have what I talked about in the beginning, where Jeff and I took care of my first patient ever, which was actually a cardiac arrest that we were able to achieve ROSC with. And then he was actually transported. He got the appropriate care he needed, and he survived, and he had a good neurological outcome. It was just the perfect first call. So what I'd like to do is allow him to kind of talk about that real quick, because it does have some relevant history between the two of us, at least, and kind of shows how I got first into emergency medicine. And then we'll add some more stuff after that.
And my first true clinical save wasn't the first, but it was the first one that actually, I'm sure, the man went home. And I love that you're doing this podcast, and I love the FOMED movement, what I've learned of it so far. And I think it's so perfect that you're doing this. But I remember you were debating medical school or law school. You just didn't know, so you wanted to give it a shot, and you thought, you know, I'm going to take this EMT class, and I'm going to see how it is. And your first day, within an hour of being there, we saved a life. And it was one of those calls that went perfect. The sun shone on us that day. God smiled. The fates and heavens opened up for us, and everything was perfect. It was one of the strangest calls I've ever been on. I had a great partner that day who knew exactly what he was doing. We were very close to the call. We had great backup. We had a great ER staff. It was everything lined up perfectly to save that guy's life. And I really, really hope he understands how lucky he was that he got a really great, and I'll show my humble side, he got a great paramedic and a great EMS team. And, you know, he influenced lives that day by actually, letting us help him.
Yeah, it was the perfect first call for me. And just like you said, there was a lot that was going on in my world trying to see what would happen and what wouldn't happen. And I mean, that just influenced me that much more. And I think, honestly, that's probably the call that made the difference. To sadly kind of correlate in, it's almost like, you know, that was your high and you've tried to chase that high ever since. Well, there's a little bit of that. It's just that was such a perfect call. You always want to have that happen again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, don't get me wrong, there were good calls before that and there were good calls after.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the special ones.
Now that wraps up podcast number 16. With podcast number 16 ending, we are also going to have the next podcast next week that is going to be about ED to EMS transfers. So the reason why I mentioned that one is because I did want to separate these, not just because of time, but also because they are very different techniques, and I'd like for both groups to have kind of a separate podcast to listen to. I'll admit, listening back to this podcast, there may be things that may need to be changed with time. You may also give your feedback and say these are other things you want us to talk about, and so, as always, we may revise these podcasts later. If you feel like this is one of those podcasts where you do want changes, let me know. Again, my email is thetotalem@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter or Facebook by searching for Total EM. And as always, if you do have anything else you want to give us feedback for, and if you're like Jeff, if you really like FOMED and you like listening to this and you want to share the message, please do. The more ways you can, the better. Anyway, we'll call that a wrap for today's episode. And as always, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.